This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Just in case you'd been wondering why it's called Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull the last few weeks, I am back. A pleasure to be back with you all this morning. Kind of back, Chris Holsky. It might go a little bit back and forth, so I'm easing back in to work here. So I did TV for a few days last week, doing radio this week. Normally I do both, but for the next little bit, I'm only going to I'm going to do one or the other. They're being really nice to me.
Yeah, without a doubt, the toughest person in the building right now.
You are very kind. You were so sweet when I came back for TV. But the silver, because there's always a silver lining, right? The silver lining in this is I have a new excuse for drinking my Diet Coke. Not that I really needed one, but because I'm on crutches, it's tougher to carry the water bottle to come up the stairs, but the Diet Coke fits in the jacket pocket perfectly. So I was able to get one of these out of the machine this morning, just put it in the pocket. And now everyone's going to be like, that's not good for building bones. Is there calcium in this stuff?
I don't think so. No, but it will make you feel maybe more alert right now. I don't think you've completely caught everybody up on what exactly happened to you on the radio side. I know you mentioned it on television.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. It was a ski accident, and it was, I'm not a wonderful skier, but I've gone to some nice hills and stuff. This was just over at Camp Fortune, and it was kind of going to be the last ski day that, for me, anyway, it was right near the end of the season, 3 weeks ago. We were just doing a little half day to ski, and then I was working a couple of days getting set to get ready for vacation. So as I'm going to the hill, I'm thinking, I've got laundry to do. I've got a million things I could have been doing. I almost phoned my friends that morning and said, I'm going to bail because I've got a lot to do. But then I thought, no, it'd be nice to catch up with them. We're just doing a half day. And we'll grab lunch and it'll be great. I'll still have time to do my stuff. But it had rained the day before on the Saturday and I didn't really check the conditions. So the hill was quite icy,
yes,
as it turns
yeah.
out. But first run of the day on a hill we've done a lot. And just kind of out of nowhere for me, there was a guy coming from behind me, right through me. And I flew up in the air and landed on what turned out to be just a really icy patch of the hill and came down on my tailbone. So I felt this explosion of pain as I landed, but then it kind of subsided and I thought, okay, it's just tailbone, right? Everyone knows those really hurt and the way you come down.
Yeah.
I think I'm fine as I'm lying there. But then I realized that I had a leg that was really awkwardly twisted underneath me. And so in fact, as it turned out, after a while, it took a while to figure it all out. I had a few fractures to the pelvis, which is a real drag because that's kind of right in the middle of your body and you use it for everything, as it turns out.
Because this was skiing, I can't help but feel like a tinge of guilt about this with the light encouragement that I gave you through the course. So, keep at it. Go get a lesson. You'll have a great time.
I honestly don't think I did anything. The guy stopped, was very kind, very nice. And he said, I'm not a great skier. I just got going too fast. But even that, I think like the collision and going up in the air, if I'd come down on a pile of beautiful snow, I probably would have been fine, right? It was just a lot of circumstances that came together. And then everyone's like, you'll be skiing again next year. I'm like, I don't care so much about that. If I can just get back to yoga and all those good things, I'll be fine. But I do want to shout them out. And I had their names here. I think it's Isabel and Aaron, the Camp Fortune Ski Patrol people were so sweet and so kind. Of course, you feel like you're creating a big, ruckus for nothing. Oh, it's all going to be fine. I was convinced that I had dislocated my hip and I just needed to click it back in. I'm like, let me get up and I'll click it back in. And they're saying, no, I don't think that's really what you need to do in this situation. They were so good. But the worst thing, and I will forever say probably very briefly, the most pain I've ever been in my life was when they had to take the ski boot off.
Ugh.
I was like, you know what? If you have a bullet, just leave the ski boot on. We can end this right now. But they're actually trained to do it. They got a third person to come, and they managed to get it off without too much pain. But apparently they won't leave that for the paramedics, because the paramedics are not
trained
in how to do that.
Yeah,
so once it was off, it was all good. But I might never put a pair of boots on again, just in case I'm not the one taking them off. But we'll see. Anyway, so this is a few weeks ago, so things are much better, but still on crutches right now. So a few little workarounds and whatnot. But Chris Holsky, oh man, you, along with Andrew and Graham a little bit, all filling in here. And I had so many friends say, who's that guy that you work with, that Chris guy? He's so good. He's so interesting and entertaining to listen to.
Well, I want to welcome you back. I'm not sure what your feelings are when it comes to artificially sweetened
You still have this?
Behind. Well, I had a whole bunch at home. I know you like your Diet Coke, but there's a can of Cherry Coke Zero Sugar.
Lovely.
Yes.
This will change it. This will be a treat. And I like to alternate between the Coke Zero and the Diet Coke because I think it's like different artificial sweeteners. So then I'm mitigating my chances of getting any crazy diseases. Thank you very much. That's a very sweet welcome back. If we are going to get into our Big Five here, John Krupe is here as well. Let's get into that.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five Stories.
John Krupe joining us from our CTV Ottawa assignment desk this morning. How are you, John?
Well, I was staying up to watch the Oilers, unfortunately, beat the Kings last night. Are you watching any hockey, Patricia? And you sound better, by the way. Fantastic.
Thank you. Guess what I've been watching? I've somehow ended up watching
Tampa, Toronto.
Quite a bit of the Leafs games.
Yeah,
accidentally cheered for the Leafs very briefly the other night because I looked down, I looked up, the goal was scored, and everyone's in blue and white, and I thought, oh my God, the Lightning have done it. It was the Leafs.
Yes, so yes, yes.
And then I felt just horrific about myself. But yeah, so last night, this Edmonton game, everyone on my text is going, what a game. This is crazy. Comeback, wild comeback, one of the biggest comebacks ever. And I didn't realize that there was still that much of it left, and I could have turned it on, but I never did. And so Edmonton was down 3-0 and ended up winning in overtime.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Didn't see that one. A lot of crazy comebacks lately. You had the Winnipeg game against Vegas on Saturday night, too, mm-hmm. and that was an excellent game, though it didn't quite work out very well for the Jets, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now, and I know we're going to move on from hockey, but if the Ottawa Senators got in, and it's too bad they had a horrible November, they're better than some of these teams. By a mile. Anyways,
you always think that, right? If your team just gets in.
Well, no,
if they just won that last game to get into the final in that particular year, for sure that would have been their year to win the final. But no, I absolutely agree with you. They could have competed well. And the other thing that we're talking about on the sports side before we start talking about the new stuff is what happened with Wrexham and Ryan Reynolds and that excitement over there as the football, soccer team that he's involved with got promoted, moved up. And just looking at... he made some comments, I think, a couple of days ago, too, about how that's a huge part of it when you're involved in team ownership is promoting the town or city that that team belongs to. And what he has done for Wrexham that a lot of people are saying, okay, come over this way. We'd love to see you do that for Ottawa. just the incredible Ryan Reynolds magical effect and the celebration there for both the ownership group and the players was really, really incredible, whether you're a fan or not. I think a lot of people are seeing those clips on social media today. So what a year. It could be next year in so many ways, right?
100%. It's going to be great next year. I think they'll make the playoffs. Like I said, too bad they had a horrible November because I'm telling you, I'm watching a lot of hockey and there's some teams that are really lame. But having said that, it's the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
They have to find themselves still.
And maybe the Habs will be in the mix next year.
Oh, sure? Absolutely not.
Keep the faith. Should we talk about this strike just really briefly that's still happening this morning, that other thing going on in Ottawa? I drove into Gatineau for lunch one day last week and just saw masses of protesters out there, out in full force there this morning around the Portage area. Apparently, I think a lot of people thought maybe this might be done this morning. Chris, were you thinking that they were going to find a resolution? Because how long can they afford to be out there making what they're making per day?
Well, honestly, I feel at this stage that perhaps the union has been deliberately confrontational or at least tried to set up a 1v1 on this when it comes to themselves versus the federal government. And I'm not sure everybody is biting on this, especially after we heard last week that in reality, only about a third of membership had voted for strike to begin with. It was something like the lines, it was still 80%. If every single person had voted statistically, it's likely that they would have voted for a strike to begin with. But last week, something that we heard directly from the mouth of the head of the union was saying that an overwhelming number of people had, it's like an overwhelming number of their members had voted for it, which is not necessarily the truth, but is that there is still an overwhelming majority of those who did vote, right? And that may give you a bit of an impression. And now we're hearing suggestions, we could have more strategic striking picketing actions today. I'm curious to see how that goes forward, though it did sound like the federal government was willing to bend a bit on working from home. We won't learn more until we get further down the line with negotiations, but maybe this ends soon. It sounds like we're heading towards that direction. because I don't think if the union has been setting up for this to look like a fight or a battle, I don't think the general public is necessarily buying that right now.
What about you, John? Out there in a little bit of rain today, do you think this is the clock is ticking on this?
Well, from the last news we got that from the union was the government has moved a bit on the wages. They credited the strike for that, and they're talking more language about remote work. So if you take those as positives, this thing could be over this week. Now, having said that, you know, they've come out with, yes, there's been progress, and then, you know, a day later they're screaming that they haven't been talking and no one's showing up at the table. I'd just like to get the numbers in now. How much is the government saving? How much does the government cost? What are the costs of the government in terms of, you know, the measures that they need, for example, for passport offices and whatnot? But how much are they saving on the payroll? When you think of them, they're saving a ton of money.
Just by employees being out for this long.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
There's that 3%, right?
And the other thing is, I don't know about you, but, you know, we obviously there are tons of people, family, friends, uncles, aunts, they all work for the government. And I get a sense that a lot of them don't want to be out. They want this thing over. They support the union, yes, but they want to be out. They want to be back to work ASAP.
Yeah, just want to get it done, get a good deal that works for them. But I've never been on a picket line myself other than to cover it. I can't imagine it's much fun to be out there doing your shift. I mean,
well,
unless you're
April.
Really adamant.
At least it's April.
One thing I noticed last Friday, and this is I think a cheeky remark, is that it was the busiest I think we'd seen in a morning when it comes to traffic. It wasn't all that busy that we had seen in years, because we did have a lot more federal workers actually out and about, and it was
Friday's
picket
usually
line.
A work from home day.
Yes, exactly. But that said, it looks like there was a path to a deal, and I don't necessarily agree with the setup that there's been like big fight or it's been aggressive. It does seem like it has been amicable at the table for the most part. One thing that did surprise me over the course of the weekend is you had Mona Fortier saying that she wasn't going to listen necessarily to kicking and screaming during the course of this, which implied that there may have been a tantrum going on, that the strike was a tantrum, and that remark hasn't seemed to blow up whatsoever, which did surprise me a little bit. Instead, it ended up being amicable.
We'll have a listen to it here before we go to break. So, yeah, this was Mona Forche with those comments that Chris Holsky was alluding to on this issue.
I'm not going to be distracted by the kicking and screaming. I am focused on making sure that we have a deal that is fair and competitive for the employees, which we have, and that is also reasonable for Canadians. I have a responsibility to strike that balance with the negotiation team, and we are at that place.
See how they're striking that balance today. When we come back, John Krupe is always trying to get a particular member of our staff to run for mayor. Well, maybe night mayor is the job for this guy. What is a nightmare? What is that going to do? And who might be the perfect person for that? We'll talk about that coming up in just a moment on The Big Five. This is News Talk 580 CFRA.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at Work. Big Five Stories.
9:26 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Patricia Pohl with you. Good morning. Good Monday morning. Hope it's going well for all of you, whether you are on the picket line at work or doing something else out there. We want to talk about this real quick. We don't have much time left, but the city of Ottawa creating this position of night mayor, as they call it. So this new strategy to grow and develop the capital's nightlife economy and shake off the image as the town that fun forgot. John Krupe, I was bugging you that you're always trying to bug Graham Richardson that he'd be an excellent mayor for the city of Ottawa, which he would be if he ever decided to run. I don't know. This is probably not the role for him, since I'm pretty sure he likes to be in bed at about 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
so he can get
and,
up to bike.
And he's playing pickleball, if not in bed.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. Like, I'm going to ask both of you. If you have friends coming in from, say, Windsor or Toronto or Alberta, and they say, hey, where should we go in Ottawa? Like, what's cool? Would you suggest the Bywood Market at night? At night?
Well, that's the only place I know really for dinners and stuff, because we work here, and at 7 o'clock, especially in patio season, we'll find places to go to eat and whatnot. Elgin Street, maybe, but I mean, there are great places to go, and there are people who are out late at night, but there's no vibrant sector.
I feel
like
for the businesses in this area because I don't think there's an effort by the city, police, responders, concerted effort like we've seen like maybe 10 or 15 years ago. We have to help the homeless in this area. We need more enforcement. We need more police response. There's another incident on the weekend, Saturday night, that the police have not shared any details yet. But Jackie Perez had a story last night. Paramedics said it was a traumatic incident. There's witnesses to say there was a shooting. We haven't heard about that. We haven't even heard about a shooting in the Byward Market on Saturday night. Is the suspect still at large? What happened? Who got hurt? Nothing. This is the problem with the city so far. No communications from O-Train to police. It doesn't apply to fire and paramedics, by the way. They're both excellent.
Well, you're just taking all the fun out of the nightlife right there, John. Sorry, I'll tell you, sorry. I don't give people, when people come to town, I don't give a lot of advice anymore. I put my advice-giving days aside when there was a new guy who was coming to work for Sportsnet a bunch of years ago, and I was, you know, working and home with young kids, and he was asking me if the Pinecrest neighborhood would make sense because he could, you know, get to work and whatnot. And I'm like, yeah, that'd be really easy. Jump on the Queensway, you'd be at Canadian Tire Center in no time at all. It's also, you can go the other way and get downtown or whatever, you know, pretty good. Well, he was so upset with me because he's like, there's nothing to do there in the evenings. I'm like, oh, is that what you were looking for?
There's IKEA. There's the big rig right there. That's actually, they got a pretty good patio and some good stuff there.
Yeah, what more do you need? We're simple people here in Ottawa.
It's like, shout out to Chris Phillips. By the way, over the course of the weekend, I drove like 12 hours. I was on a 12-hour trip back and forth to go wish my grandmother, Florence Holsky, a 90th birthday.
Oh,
and went through Flesherton on the way, the home of Chris Neal.
Yes.
So I just want to tick off all of the and want to check all the boxes on Chris's. I don't think that what we're talking about here with whomever this nightmare is. And by the way, this is a good idea.
Well, that,
but the
when
name,
you say it, it sounds like
yes,
nightmare.
Yes, but the
it?
Name, yeah. But the name itself lends itself to so much comedy. Whether it's the pun, whether it's the whole superhero connotation. Are we talking about Batman or Spider-Man as Night Monkey or whatever? Security is something that I think is going to be in the pocket of the day mayor, who was elected with a promise to create a satellite office or a satellite station, I should say, in the Byward Market. Whomever comes in and takes this nightmare position is going to be focused strictly on entertainment, and I think that's a good idea. Having somebody centralized to try to talk to all the various districts, seeing what we can do. If Ottawa wants to have a successful nightlife, it needs to become a city where there are several things happening in the city at once. Where you've got a concert happening here, you've got a sports event happening here, maybe another sports event happening
what
here. Ottawa doesn't have anything.
What are they
going
to do? Sell tickets? I don't get it.
Well, you can't necessarily do that, but if you do have some level of coordination or at least some kind of plan to say, okay, what can we take Ottawa and how can we take Ottawa and make it a bit more like a Montreal or Toronto? Because baby steps. What can we do about that?
Good luck to that as you walk down Reno.
It's so much more organic in those big cities, right? Where it just kind of happens and evolves. What are the hours for this position? Like 6 p.m. to 1 a.m.? I can get on board with that.
I think they're going to work mostly during the day, remarkably, yeah.
9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Thank you to Chris and to John. When we come back, we're going to get you up to speed on what is happening with the public service strike and some analysis of what is going on there. Lots more on the show as well today. It's Music Monday. Eric Alper will be here in just a little bit as well. Happy to be back with you. Hope you're having a good Monday. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Hey, my question for you today is...
Only one question.
Quick question.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
9:35 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. Want to talk about nightlife in Ottawa? Is there nightlife in Ottawa? Is there a job that needs to be done to get us hopping, man, to make things happen here in Ottawa, to make this a vibrant city, not just during the day, but in the evenings, comparable to a Montreal, to a Toronto? Nightmare. Does that make sense to you? What would be the number one thing you would do if you were Nightmare to change the nightlife, to draw people downtown or into the city or various parts of the city in the evening? What would it take to get you off the couch, out of your pajamas, and out at night? Let us know. 580-580, that's our question of the day.
It was the summer of love.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm not going to be distracted by the kicking and screaming. I am focused on making sure that we have a deal that is fair and competitive for the employees, which we have, and that is also reasonable for Canadians. I have a responsibility to strike that balance with the negotiation team, and we are at that place.
the employer needs to, if they really want to get to a deal, then they have to start taking this seriously and start responding to these issues on a more timely basis, basically, and not taking, you know, 30 and 35 hours to respond.
Those were the voices of Treasury Board President Mona Forche and Chris Aylward, the national president of PSAC, as on this Monday morning, 155,000 federal public servants remain off the job across the country this morning. Some people anticipating that this will get done soon. It's just a matter of time, but a little bit of finger pointing over the weekend as we bring in Barry Eidlin, Associate Professor, Department of Sociology at McGill University. Good morning to you, Barry.
Good morning, Patricia.
So what do you make of sort of what's transpired the last couple of days and what we're hearing from both sides? Is this typical in this kind of a situation, blaming the other for maybe working in bad faith?
This is pretty much the normal give and take of negotiations in the midst of a strike. You know, tensions are high. That's pretty normal. You know, we need to keep in mind that the employer, in this case, the federal government, has been dragging its feet on these contract negotiations for 2 years. They've had plenty of time to come to a deal. This is a last resort by the PSAC workers to try to get the employer to the bargaining table. And so the employer might feel a bit prickly about being forced to come to the bargaining table, but at least they're negotiating.
And is the employer feeling the pressure as we might anticipate? I mean, we know that the PSAC only has so much money to continue to pay people to be out and fight the good fight and be on the picket line. Is there enough pressure on the government as services start to diminish a little bit to get it done very quickly?
Well, I mean, they are at the table. So that's progress over what we've seen over the past 2 years of foot dragging. Mm-hmm. You know, it remains to be seen how much more pressure they need. I just was reading that the union is now sort of trying to escalate their picketing to more strategic locations to up the pressure a bit. But, you know, from what I can see, it looks like they are at the negotiating table, which again is progress over what we've seen.
Well, let's talk about that, the pickets and where they do them and when they do them. There were no picket lines on the weekend. So for people working weekend shifts, they were told just, you know, check in, but there was nowhere for them to go. Is that an odd strategy?
I mean, I think that going on strike is not a walk in the park, so to speak. You know, that you need to you need to pace yourself. So and so it seems to me that the union is probably trying to balance sort of the needs of the members in terms of they might be thinking that this is going to last a little bit longer than what we're seeing so far.
Mm. So what do you mean when you say that in terms of people who are watching from the outside and thinking, okay, this could be hours? You think this could drag on through this week?
Well, you know, if you look historically speaking, you know, there have been two strikes prior to this, one in 2004, one in 1991. The one in 1991 was about 3 weeks. The one in 2004 was just about a week. So I think that, you know, we're looking at that ballpark. I don't see a prolonged, you know, months-long dispute. I don't think that's tenable.
Mm. So when they move the picket lines to different areas and they talk about strategic locations, is it about visibility or is it about inconveniencing enough people that it changes the dynamic and puts more pressure on the employer side rather than the employees?
Yeah. It's really the way that PSAC is talking about it. It is about exerting leverage on the employer, and they are trying to do that in ways that minimize inconvenience for the broader public. So it really is sort of a threatening revenue streams is how they're referring to this. Mm. So it's not about creating more problems for Canadians. It's more about creating more pressure on the employer.
But the government, I guess, is saving a significant amount of money by not paying those workers while they're out on strike.
Yes. I mean, they are paying a price in other ways for that, for sure.
So what do you make of kind of where we're at in terms of the rhetoric? You said this is fairly typical with two sides like this. Do you think that the temperature kind of rises even further before this actually gets done, or do you think they just hunker down at the table here and somehow knock it out over these next couple of days?
I mean, I think it would be reasonable to expect, given that the negotiations have been dragging on for as long as they have, and that the employer has been as recalcitrant as it has in this case with trying to come to a deal, that it might take a bit more pressure. So I would not be surprised to see the escalation go up a few notches. But, you know, it could be that, you know, I mean, it seems so far from what I mean, that the polling that is available, which is not very much, does show that Canadians broadly support the workers' demands for pay raises, for shift premiums, you know, for more flexible work, that kind of better leave policies, those kinds of things. So it could very well be that the employer recognizes that they do have to come to some agreement sooner rather than later.
So I take it from what you're saying that you very much put the blame on this for getting to this point on the part of the employer for letting it go on this long. And in conversations with Mona Forte, with the Treasury Board president in the past, it seemed very much that she was adamant that she wanted the whole remote work home from home issue to stay outside the collective bargaining process. Could they have jumped on this a little bit earlier and maybe in terms of coming out with a stronger offer on pay raises and avoided some of this going down the way it has? Would there have been a strategic way for them to handle it, you think, that would avoid this? Because I always find it interesting. I think it often seems that, you know, the unions have to be pretty... They have to be pretty forceful in order to prove their worth in these cases. But would there have been a way for the federal government to just dig into this earlier and get this done without employees walking off the job?
Absolutely. I mean, you don't drag on for 2 years. I mean, it's been dragging on for 2 years, right? I mean, I think there, and that's 2 years since the expiration, right? So there was negotiations going on prior to those 2 years. So for 2 years, these federal workers have been working under the previous contract with their previous pay rates, you know, and meanwhile, you know, we've had the cost of living crisis with, you know, prices rising and their wages have been frozen essentially. That's not a situation that workers would want to be working under. They've been wanting to come to an agreement. It's really been the employer that's been dragging this out. So I think that we've seen that there's, you know, these questions of pay raises are questions of priorities of where the government wants to direct its resources. And so they've shown that they can, when called upon, make the call to direct resources appropriately. And so I don't see that they should be doing that at this point. They could have been doing that a long time ago.
Last question for you. There's, you know, I guess a bit of a formula when it comes to numbers and pay raises and negotiating a union, you know, talking about the 13.5%, the offer being 9% over 3 years, and how are you going to meet in the middle on that or whatnot. How does the remote work issue or more flexible work issue, how does that hijack the process, or does it? Is that going to be the most contentious part of this in the end in terms of getting it done?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure how much it hijacks, because it's an integral part of the negotiations, right? So, I mean, you need to, a negotiation is never just about the money. It's always about broader issues as well of working conditions. And that's what the remote work issue is. It's about negotiating the control over the pace, nature, and location of one's work, and the government has sort of tried to draw a line in the sand and say that they want unilateral control over this, and it just doesn't seem to me to make sense to with a complicated situation like this with all sorts of workers in all different situations that you wouldn't try to at least have some input from the workers themselves, the ones who actually know how the work is done, when you're trying to figure out how you're going to organize your workplace. And that's really what the union is asking for in this case.
And that's one of the number one things that an employee anywhere would tell you they want, a little bit of input on how their work situation is going to play out. All right, Barry, thank you very much. Appreciate your insight today.
Thanks, Patricia. Glad to be here.
Barry Eidlin is Associate Professor, Department of Sociology at my alma mater, McGill University. 9:51 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we're going to talk about this job of nightmare trying to grow and develop Ottawa's nightlife economy. And that's our question of the day as well. What would you do if you had the title of night mayor to draw people out of their homes and make them want to be out in the exciting city of Ottawa in the evening? Lots of you commenting on that. 580, 580. We'll get into that in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:56 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Monday morning to you. We're talking about the job of nightmare and what a nightmare might do to actually ramp up the nightlife in Ottawa. That's our question of the day for you. What would you do? Someone texting from Orleans saying, I have everything I need here in my Orleans suburb. Why go downtown? I would be interested in going to see the Sens downtown. That's about it. A reliable working transit that doesn't give me the Orleans tour would help a ton. Sam in Nepean says, business downtown gets incentive for opening late. A casino would be a draw. LRT, working and free after 7 p.m. as well, security and police. And Mark in Centertown says, good morning, Patricia. To get people downtown, the one thing to do that will never be done is provide ample free parking or even ample low-cost parking. There's no way my suburban friends will take transit to a restaurant or bar downtown when they can drive and park for free at the same or a nicer in the suburbs and deal with the rampant and growing drug and violence issues as well. Okay, well, meters are free in the evening after 5:30. But let's get into this with Michelle Grew, Executive Director, Ottawa Coalition of Business Improvement Areas. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, Patricia.
What is your reaction to this plan and the idea of nightmare and some of what goes along with it? Is this kind of initiative necessary?
Yes, it is. And actually, our organization has been part of this consultation. And I do need to stress that it's not just about reviving the nightlife economy in downtown. It's for throughout the city.
Okay,
so
good
point. It's
important
for people to know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, why are we here? Why are we sort of known as the city that fun forgot and nightlife is an issue?
I think we're here because of the kind of story that we've been telling, the pictures that people see. But in fact, you know, Ottawa does have great pockets of nightlife economy throughout our city. You have, like, lots of entertainment everywhere. It's just people don't know about it. And so it doesn't serve us when we're trying to attract people to come and live and work here.
One thing I notice as someone who's not in my 20s or 30s, when I am out in the evening, that I often feel like I'm one of the older people that is out and about. When I go to other cities and I travel and I'm in big cities, you see people of all ages out all the time. Is that some sort of a mindset thing here? Or?
I think it is a mindset, and certainly I'm of the closer to 50 than anything else, and I think it just depends on where you go, right? We're not part of the Byward Market crowd sometimes. You know, you see a lot of younger students there. But you go into a restaurant on Wellington West, you know, at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday, and it's busy, and there are several ages there.
Okay, so I didn't leave you enough time for this, and we'll get into it more on other days as well, but what would be the number one thing kind of to do to start kickstarting this process right now, do you think?
I think the first thing to talk about is the story of Ottawa's nightlife already. We're not making anything up. We already do have it. It's just it's not being advocated and drawn out to showcase to the world. It's, you know, as an Ottawa native, I know that we have this. It's just we need to revive it.
The suggestion of free transit after 7 o'clock or more free parking, making it easier for people just to choose to get out. Do you like that idea?
I think making everything accessible to make everything safer for people to go out at night and easier will certainly help all neighborhoods in the city of Ottawa from the 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Nightlife economy.
All right. Well, we will talk again. I'm going to go through some of the ideas that I get on the text board here, and we will talk again in more detail about just how this might evolve. But Michelle, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
On a Monday morning, we're talking about the nightlife and going out. Probably not too many of you going out tonight. Maybe Wednesday, right? Wine Wednesday? 10 o'clock on News Talk 580 CFRA. Unfortunately, we have to talk about what has become a almost annual spring crisis, it seems. The flood levels reaching 2017 levels in the Ottawa Valley, but are things kind of stabilizing now? Are we going to be okay this year? We'll talk about where we're at coming up in just a moment. Quick break for the news headlines. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA. CFRA. Ottawa's home for live, local, breaking news. Listen anytime, anywhere, through your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
.08 on News Talk 580 CFRA. A little bit of a rainy Monday morning. Some light rain falling out there. Not a lot of rain in the forecast this week. We have a few days that are saying chance of showers, but not significant rain at this point. For most of us, of course, just an inconvenience. Maybe you have to throw on the jacket, missing the sunshine. Some people watching the water levels very closely out there again this year. I have often said that one of the toughest things I've ever had to do in terms of covering a story in this area was going back to some of the same homes in 2019 and talking to some of the same people that were hit in 2017 by flooding that we talked about at the time being sort of a once in a 100-year kind of occurrence. And then they were dealing with similar horrific conditions just a couple of years later. So you can imagine it's pretty traumatic for a lot of people who have been through this before. Now, certain areas look pretty good this year. Other areas are a little more concerning. On the weekend, we were hearing that levels on the Ottawa River in the Whitewater Region Township of the Ottawa Valley were getting up close to water levels seen back in 2017. We want to see how that is looking here on a Monday morning. Checking in now with Neil Nicholson, who is the mayor in that township. Good morning to you, Neil.
Good morning, Patricia. Thanks for having me today.
I appreciate you coming on. So how are we doing? Did it get pretty scary over the weekend?
It did. We were uncertain how much rain we would get and where it would fall. So people were watching very closely to see how that might affect our levels on the Ottawa.
So where are we at right now in terms of how far you get, I guess, above sea level or whatever the best calculation of that is?
Yeah, in our community, we have two reference points along our coastline. It's about a 62-kilometer coastline, so it's pretty significant. Right now, we're just shy of 113 meters above sea level on one side, and then the other side, we're at about just over 108 meters. Both are right on the cusp of the same height we had in 2017, so it is pretty significant for our community.
Okay, so we'll do a mental map here for a second. So where is Pembroke situated in this region?
Pembroke is just upriver of us, about 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay. So how many homes would be in this area that you're talking about where you're getting these measurements?
Yeah, in our Pembroke reference point, that bay, that large body of water, we have about 60 homes that are right now surrounded by water, in some cases 2 or 3 feet cover their yards. We're getting water in the basements, and some things are floating around their yards at this point.
And how were was 2017 the year when it was really bad for you? Were you guys spared in 2019? Was it bad in on both those sort of areas?
Yeah, it was bad in both. Yeah, 2019 was horrific.
Okay,
that was when we had levels go up basically another meter, 2 meters from what we're seeing.
Oh
right
man!
Now.
Okay,
some of our homes had 8 feet of water in them, completely destroyed by the flooding.
So, what does that do in terms of people watching and preparing and hoping it doesn't get as bad? Are people just that much more? I would say nervous, but probably more terrified about what they might be facing because of what they've been through in the past.
Yeah, it's a significant strain on people's mental health to be able to look at that water and not know what's going to happen. The good thing is that our community is pretty tight-knit, and a lot of experience from 2017 and 2019. So, you know, the newcomers, the people that have recently moved here, they're a little more wary, but the other folks, they remain on pins and needles Yes.
So for those people in the areas really affected, is it true that some have already had to, you know, jump in a canoe to navigate to get to their car and that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Like I said, there's about 50 or 60 homes that are completely surrounded, and they've moved their vehicles out to higher ground, and they're accessing their homes and moving stuff back and forth by boat.
Okay. And staying in their homes or out of their homes completely?
Right now, we believe that most of them are staying in their homes. There's still power, and they're making sure their sump pumps are running, and they're trying to make sure that their homes are protected. The biggest threat right now when the waters are at this height is wind.
Mm.
And we were really watching Sunday afternoon when we heard some wind gusts were getting up. The waves and the debris in the water can tear off the front of the home. That's the biggest thing right now when we have the heights at this level is what's the wind going to do? What direction is it blowing?
Oh.
How big are the waves?
Yeah, some of those big items that should not be in the water that are so dangerous, of course. And it's the thing about this is it's just a slow, torturous process as people try to do their best to protect their homes. And, you know, we've seen in the past, sometimes you'd get through a night sandbagging and think you'd made it and then only to discover hours later that, no, it's just coming up that much more. And it's kind of that just slow, demoralizing process. But how is it looking in terms of maybe some kind of a plateau and maybe going to be okay this year? Are you feeling somewhat optimistic?
Yeah, the news that came out late last night from the OttawaRiver.ca website, which is a regulation board that takes the information from 9 different agencies that manage the flow on the Ottawa and into the Ottawa. Their forecast sees us plateau this week, which has been great news. Again, mm-hmm. Now the big concern is wind. But people aren't letting up. The way the Ottawa River works is that the northern waters are now being held back by large dams and reservoirs, such as Temiskaming. Now they are holding back their spring melt for as long as they can to allow the current levels to dissipate. The fear and what happened in 2019 is they had to release their waters. They couldn't hold them back anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So we were already up at this level, and then we received all the melt from up north, and that's what happened. It caused a lot of the damage. So as long as we can hold, they can continue to hold their water, and we can continue to have our water flow downstream, we'll be in good stead for the second surge.
So it's a fascinating process how the river levels are managed and everything that goes along with it. Just before I let you go, is there any need for help if people are listening and thinking, oh, they'd be able to go over and do they need help filling sandbags or doing anything like that right now, or is it just sort of a holding pattern?
Right now it's a holding pattern.
Okay.
If we see, like we said, a storm coming in while the levels are currently high, we would be looking for help from the community and our neighbors and county to see if we could help secure people's properties. But right now, it's pins and needles. We wait.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, let us know if that changes. In the meantime, all the best to you and the people in your community. Appreciate you coming on and getting us up to speed on this. And our fingers are crossed for you, for sure.
Thank you so much. We appreciate the support, Patricia.
Absolutely. Neil Nicholson, mayor of Whitewater Region Township, as they watch those river levels get close to where they were in 2017. 10:16 here on News Talk 580 CFRA. Our question of the day for you today, what would you do to ramp up the nightlife, not just in downtown Ottawa, but in Ottawa generally? There's going to be a night mayor who's going to be tasked with that, trying to find a way to not just get people out, but as our last guest prior to this one said, focus the light on the stuff that's already happening in Ottawa, the places where there is good nightlife. Sometimes we don't know about it. A lot of suggestions around safety and accessibility and transit and making it attractive for people to get in their car or get on transit to get out in the evening. But I like this as well. Someone pointing out one thing people need to take into account. Ottawa is a very athletic town. Lots of serious athletes, young and adults, who continue their sports. And Ottawa is known for the great outdoors. I'm one of those adults. I don't want to go out. I want to sleep so I can get up and practice my sport and have the energy to do my job. And I think this applies to many out there. An interesting take. What would you do if you were trying to ramp up the nightlife here in Ottawa? 10:17 on News Talk 580 CFRA. If you do like the outdoor life, when we come back, some tips for getting back into gardening following a winter away. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
on the go? Take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull.
10:23 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. Our question of the day today, if you were Nightmare, what would you do? A lot of people texting in with some ideas about, you know, why they don't go downtown or why they don't go out and what might change that for them, what might encourage them to get out and enjoy a little bit of nightlife. PG is texting and saying a place where people can go for a safe experience, good food, live entertainment, different genres, patio settings, there's no vehicle access, more police presence, a place that has a great vibe and residents and visitors can call it the place to go. The market area no longer has that unless something major is done. Perhaps Spark Street rejuvenation would help and it would become the place to go at night, something along the lines of Santana Row in San Jose or other similar places where it attracts all kinds of people and demographics. Keep your suggestions coming here. What might be on the plate for the Nightmare, that new job that's being created to change the title that we keep going back to every now and then, the city that fun forgot here in poor little Ottawa. There is a lot going on. Just some people don't know about it. And some of us just like to be doing other things. Maybe you're more of a backyard person. Maybe you want to be out in the garden and that's what you're thinking about this time of year as spring is beginning. Not a gorgeous day for gardening today. Or maybe this is a perfect day for some of those jobs in the garden. A little bit of rain coming down. Rebecca Last is coordinator with Master Gardeners of Ottawa Carleton and joins us now. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
We could maybe call this segment a gardening for dummies 101 because I know very little about gardening, although I've watched other people in my house do it and be very enthusiastic about it. I never know what I should be doing or when, and I find it all very intimidating. But is now the right time to start? Is it too late? Is it too early in terms of the weather and getting your garden going?
It's so that's actually a really interesting question. For certain types of maintenance, now is actually a really good time. For example, I just pruned my grapevines last week. That was actually a little bit late because in some instances you really want to wait. You really want to make sure that these plants are still dormant. And with climate change, it's a little tricky sometimes because we get these warm spells and all the plants start to wake up. Another thing that you can do on a cloudy day like this, now that the ground has thawed out, is if you were using something like a rose cone, those big styrofoam covers, to protect semi-hardy plants, you could lift that off now. And you want to do that on a cloudy day like today, mm-hmm. Because you don't want any new growth to get scorched by the hot sun.
Right. Makes sense. Okay. So you're drawing me in with the grapevines, as in you grow grapes?
Absolutely, yeah.
To make wine or to eat the grapes?
When the Vikings first arrived here, they called this Vinland because there are native grapes, we call them fox grapes, that grow wild. And there are lots and lots of cultivars that that will do very nicely in the Ottawa area.
Mm. So do you eat the grapes that you grow?
I do, yeah. Mm. I have a very small garden, so I don't get a lot of productivity off of them. And sometimes I have to fight the squirrels and the raccoons and, you know, the various other critters who
right.
get in there.
Also
and get
enjoy
my
those.
I do. But when I can get them, I do eat the grapes. Yeah.
Very cool. I mean, I'm not a gardener, but I love a vineyard. I love the look of grapes growing on the vine. There's something about that whether you're a wine drinker or not, there's something that's just so beautiful and gorgeous about that. That's something I could get on board with, growing my own grapes. And it's interesting that it is a good area for it because we've just only very recently seen, you know, a couple of vineyards in this area and that kind of thing. But this has always been a place where certain types of grapes will grow?
Absolutely,
okay.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So if you're a beginner getting out there gardening, what are the things that you do need to be thinking about in terms of what are there easier plants that you might want to start with if you're a new gardener?
Yeah, so as master gardeners, we always encourage people to look at native plants as much as possible. And if you're beginning with a fresh plate, let's say in a new development, the first thing to be aware of is that the soil would have been basically scraped down to subsoil by the developers. So you probably will have to think about importing some soil into your garden so that you've got something good for plants to grow in.
Mm. Some nice, rich soil.
And then your next step would be to think about the woody plants. And there's some wonderful research by fellow called Doug Tallamy, who has written about, and over 40 years as an entomologist, has looked at what are the keystone native plants in terms of supporting wildlife. Oak trees, for example, are wonderful, wonderful keystone plants. And there are smaller cultivars that are very narrow, the columnar oaks, that work really well in small gardens as well. You could even look at some of the native shrubs, dogwoods, for example, or viburnums that work really well in small spaces and that will also support wildlife. And then when you come to perennial plants, so there's kind of three main classes. There's the annual plants that complete their life cycle in 1 year, and those would be the typical bedding plants that we put out, cosmos and geraniums and things like that. Geraniums actually are tender perennials, but that's another story.
Okay.
Then there's biennials that have a two-year life cycle. A lot of the vegetables that we grow actually have a two-year life cycle, things like cabbages and cauliflowers and so forth.
What is the biggest joy for you? And you said you have a small garden yourself, and being out in the garden and cultivating and watching that come to fruition. What's the biggest pleasure in it for you?
Oh my gosh. I just find gardening it's a full body experience. I love the smell of wet, fresh earth on a slightly moist day like today. I love the look of those new blooms that are coming out of the ground. I have a lot of native spring ephemerals that come out at this time of year. So I've got these beautiful little white bloodroots everywhere, little white flowers with yellow centers. I've got crocuses, some early tulips coming. Mm. In another day or two, I expect I'll be seeing blossoms on, I have a Nanking cherry, which is a cultivar that was developed in the prairies, and it's super hardy, so it's great for this area. You just need to make sure that you or your neighbor has a buddy for it so you get good fruit. Service berries, which increasingly are being used as a street tree in the city of Ottawa. Nice little compact tree or shrub. It comes in a multi-stem format. That'll be blooming soon, and then by Canada Day, I'll be picking the fruit from that, and again, fighting off the birds and squirrels because they want some too.
It all sounds incredibly beautiful as you describe it, and I can almost smell it a little bit too. So we'll have to chat again as gardening season progresses, but very quickly before I let you go, where can people find some information, whether they're a new gardener, experienced gardener, if they want to go online and grab some information about how to get going here this spring?
Yeah, so lots and lots of sources, but go with local sources, Master Gardeners of Ottawa Carleton. We have an excellent website with lots and lots of information. We also have a Facebook page with about 13,000 followers.
Mm.
So you can post your pictures on there, do a little bring and brag, and also post questions. We have an email helpline that people can write to us, and we're happy to answer individual questions. And currently we're wrapping up a lecture series with Friends of the Farm about garden design. So if you are starting fresh, there's some really good tips that you can get from those talks.
Awesome. All right, Rebecca, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and have a wonderful gardening season.
And you too. Rebecca, thanks for your interest.
Rebecca Lass is coordinator with Master Gardeners of Ottawa Carleton, an email helpline for gardening. Things you didn't know you needed. I maybe need. 10:31 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, it's Music Monday. Eric Alper will be here.
I could have my Gucci on. I go in my Louis Vuitton. But even with nothing on, bet I made you look.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
10:40 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. Our question of the day for you today, if you were Nightmare, what would you do to revamp Ottawa's nightlife or shine the spotlight on what is happening right now? Getting some great suggestions from people. Appreciate that. Some of you telling us why you don't go out or don't go downtown or don't do things in the evening, which is all fair as well. I'll tell you where we do shine here in Ottawa. On the music festival front. I feel like people embrace the music festivals here in Ottawa. We miss them when they were gone. Jazz Fest, Blues Fest, City Folk, all of that, and look forward to another wonderful summer season. on the music festival front. 580-580 if you want to text me about some other suggestions you might have in terms of revamping the nightlife here in what people like to call the city that fun forgot. But let's talk about music festivals here a little bit today on this Music Monday with Eric Alper, who is here, our music expert and publicist. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Do you want to hear my idea for nightlife?
Yes.
Have music festivals every single night.
Yeah.
All year round.
I mean, that's it for me. A beautiful, gorgeous night. I mean, yeah. If it's, okay, I have a weather thing. I don't want to be cold. But if it's a gorgeous summer night, I could certainly be out at a music festival every single night, especially if you get the kind of guests we tend to get for the likes of Blues Fest. You know, if you got some big name guests and then you go and you hear some of those really cool artists that you didn't expect to hear as you're walking around and whatnot. I love it. I absolutely love it. I missed it like crazy when it was gone. So I love that suggestion. You get my vote for nightmare so far.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where I think during COVID there were a number of things that people missed. People missed going, obviously, you know, excluding seeing family members. But going to the movies was one of them, and going to concerts. You know, as a teenager, listening to the kind of music that I was listening to, and being the geek that I was, and the short, hairy man, you know, that I became, music festivals was psychologically a really great place to realize that there are others just like you living in the same city, and you had no idea that any of these people even existed. So there's something definitely psychological about that community aspect.
Yeah.
And going through these festivals, it'll be quick to realize just how important they were, not only to the artists, but to the communities and the scene itself.
Yeah. Here's a question that this is probably one of those questions you've asked on Twitter at some point. Here's a question I might put out as a question of the day sometime. How many of us cried the very first time we went to a live concert? The first time you go to see an artist you love in that concert experience and you're like, oh my God, that's them right there. And this is amazing. And it actually triggers a teary emotional response.
Oh, I still do.
Yeah.
When I saw Paul McCartney for the first time really late, and mm-hmm. I'm talking maybe 5 or 6 years ago, that was the first time, I think, other than working with Ringo Starr, that I've actually been in the same room as a Beatle. And you look at him when he's singing Let It Be or Hey Jude, and you realize that is the guy that I have thought about at least once every single day since I was 8.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah, amazing.
You know, one artist told me during COVID, he was like, you know, the importance of music festivals is that people always want to see the body.
Mm-hmm.
They want to see the body. They want to see that person in the same room doing the things that they have seen only through a 2D screen, and that will never leave, no matter how people listen to music, whether it's CD or cassette or streaming. There's nothing like, you know, you can't download a live concert experience.
Yeah, live is different. Absolutely. I had that same kind of experience you were talking about when I first saw the Rolling Stones and thought maybe I was seeing them for the last time, you know, 20 odd years ago or whatever. But okay, so the music festival experience itself, music festival, I guess really the 1960s is when they became a thing. And as soon as we think music festival, a lot of us think Woodstock, but Woodstock, maybe not the biggest of the bunch necessarily.
Yeah, you know, you can go back a couple of years to the Newport Folk Festival back in 1965, where that was the festival that Bob Dylan used to be an acoustic act. He was just a leader of the folk music movement. He decided to plug in his guitar and went electric, and that was when the audience booed him. They called him a traitor to the music community, but that was not only a big change in Bob Dylan's career, but also foreshadowing the absolute dawn and excitement of rock festivals for decades to come.
Let's hear a little bit of Bob Dylan from back in 1965. And that's still a debate that people have, I guess, electric versus acoustic, and some people like it one way and some people only like it the other way, and it's kind of an interesting thing that became a big controversy there.
Yeah, there's something about the word authentic that still exists. We're still talking about it when it comes to artificial intelligence and art and people creating songs through AI. It's, you know, can that have a soul? And, you know, talking about soul with the Monterey Pop Festival in 1967, that was the peak of the start of the San Francisco scene with the Mamas and the Papas and Simon and Garfunkel and the Byrds and Janis Joplin. That was also the concert that Jimi Hendrix, who was fairly unknown at the time, decided to do something, and he burned his guitar in order to wow the crowd and played the guitar while it was burning, and becoming really a legend after that.
Okay, the Monterey Pop Festival, so that's number two on our list here that I'm looking at in terms of the most important music festivals in North America. And then that brings us to Woodstock back in 1969. And we have a little Jimi Hendrix from that one as well, I think. Like a ball. That's Jimi Hendrix doing the Star Spangled Banner for us. So, I mean, Woodstock is absolutely legend. What made it so important in our culture?
500,000 people were there, and about 72 million people claimed to have been there. When Jimi Hendrix performed the Star Spangled Banner in the early mornings on Monday, there were maybe a couple thousand people left. He was so behind in the times in terms of actually getting on stage. He was so late because they had 32 artists perform over 3 days, including Janis Joplin and Santana and The Who and Sly and the Family Stone. It really set the tone forever when it came to community peace and love and togetherness and hanging out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you weren't there, you wish you had been there, and so legendary. So all of us have heard of Woodstock. We've all heard tales from Woodstock. But also in 1969 was the Toronto Rock and Roll Festival. Oh, sorry. That was John Lennon, Dizzy Miss Lizzie from the Toronto Rock and Roll Festival. I'm producer Corey and I are chatting behind the scenes about what actually came from the festival itself. I don't think I've ever heard of the Toronto Rock and Roll Festival. Tell me about this one, Eric.
Yeah, this one was interesting because after the Beatles split up, only Ringo and Paul seemed to never leave the road. George Harrison never really dug it, and John Lennon was really too busy dealing with the U.S. government over visa issues and his art career. So he decided to do his solo live performance and his debut in Toronto, away from all of the hubbub of America. And on that bill was not only John Lennon and Yoko Ono, but Eric Clapton. And there was also, some pretty great people in the crowd, too. So it's one of those places where, because John Lennon actually performed there, it will forever be a part of Canadian music history.
All right. Very, very cool. And now we move up into the 80s, and this is something that I actually remember happening as it happened. This was a time when a lot of musicians were coming together to be supportive of causes. And the really cool thing about Live Aid 1985 was that there were all these huge names that all got on stage together. Let's have a little listen.
Every move you make, every vow you break, every smile you fake, every step you take, I'll be watching you. Since you're gone, I'll be lost without a trace.
Oh, those voices. So Every Breath You Take, of course, a big Police hit. That was Sting from the Police, and Phil Collins also a part of that. And this was sort of a massive new movement almost that was happening in the 1980s.
Yeah, before Live Aid, artists weren't really concerning themselves so much on the political or the social activism side of things. It all depends on what kind of music you kind of listen to. Obviously, if you were punk, that was deeply rooted in what was going on in your community around you. But after Live Aid in 1985, it seemed like every artist had to align themselves with a cause. This was the moment, of course, that Queen did their 20-minute set that has been deemed the greatest musical set in music in concert history, and for people that missed it, they can still go online and check it out. When Freddie Mercury just absolutely just took hold of that 80,000 people that was at London, and I mean, he could have said, everybody take off your clothes and come back to my house, and everybody would have done that. It was just a global jukebox, and helped raise money and awareness for the famine relief that was going on in Ethiopia at the time.
Thank God he did not say that. I might watch that later today. That might be on my list for this afternoon. All right. We are going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk about the rest of the most important music festivals in North America. You'll have heard of most of these, I think, on our Music Monday here with Eric Alper. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Welcome back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Just your typical welcome back to News Talk 580 CFRA with a little Rage Against the Machine. Bulls on Parade, that's from Lollapalooza 1991. That's the music festival, I think, Eric, that probably wins the Best Name Award.
Yeah, this was the time, I mean, this was such a perfect time for, I think, a lot of our listeners, maybe early 20s, mid-20s, when this festival happened, thanks to Perry Farrell, who was the frontman for the band Jane's Addiction. He wanted to have a festival that spoke to him and the alternative rock fan base, including those people who loved metal and punk and ska. And the first one back in 1991 was probably the most important, because that showed that there was a huge community and financial wherewithal to have it, including Nine Inch Nails and Ice-T, Living Color, Rollins, and Fishbone, and Rage Against the Machine.
Coachella has been around for a little while as well. Here's a listen to some Daft Punk from one of those years.
Television rules the nation. Television rules the nation.
That might be 2006, so a little bit more recent. Coachella this year, I guess, just wrapped up, best known for perhaps reigniting the passion between Canadian singer Shawn Mendes and Camila Cabello. There were lots of shots of them enjoying Coachella this year. But tell me about this festival.
Yeah, when Coachella started in 1999, they thought that maybe 70,000 people would attend the 2 days, but they got about 30,000 people and lost over $1 million. And they thought that that was it. There was no way that they can come back for that, but they have, and it's certainly one of the world's most loved festivals. They've really designed the festival to be a social media maven and a haven for not only artists, but fans who want to show the world that they are there and look at what they're wearing and look at what they're doing. And, you know, this is so important, because after Coachella started, it seemed like every festival couldn't just get away with having artists. They needed to have a Ferris wheel and a food court the size of a mall, and you need to have things for people to take pictures of while standing in front of them. So pretty important from that moment on.
A whole Instagrammable event, yeah, as it were. Yeah. Okay, let's bring it back up north to Toronto. This is Molson Canadian Rocks with a little AC/DC. ?2003 was a big year for this festival.
Yeah, that was 2003, because the city of Toronto and pretty much all of Canada were having problems getting tourists back into the city, specifically because SARS was such a huge crisis that put everybody's tourist dollars back in the pocket. So the city decided to have a massive concert featuring The Stones, AC/DC, Rush, The Guess Who, and Justin Timberlake, among others.
All right, really quickly, we're almost out of time. One of the most talked about festivals is one that never happened, the Fyre Festival back in 2017, Eric.
The Fyre Festival, the organizers are planning another one. Please don't go to this. That's all I can say about that. Tickets were up to $150,000 a ticket. It happened in 2017. They were promised the best of food, art, music, and adventure, and none of that happened. The organizer, Billy McFarlane, spent 6 months in jail as a result on fraud convictions. So let the buyer beware. If the festival looks too good to be true, maybe you just want to wait on maybe parting with your money.
Yeah, don't go to that. You want to go to this instead. Ottawa Blues Fest back this summer. The Foo Fighters will be back for 2023. That was one of the most spectacular concerts at Blues Fest ever, probably back in 2018. Here's a reminder. It's interesting hearing this music from these live events, but really quickly, a really nice full lineup for the 2023 version of the festival again in Ottawa this year.
I'm going to be there. It's Shania Twain and Weezer, Robert Plant, Death Cab for Cutie, Foo Fighters, Mumford & Sons, Pitbull, and The Smile, which is Radiohead spinoff band. So come on out to that one. It happens July 6th to the 9th, and then the 12th to the 16th of July.
I am going to be there, too. I will look for you in the crowd at LeBreton Flats. 11 o'clock on News Talk 580 CFRA. Those are some of the biggest music festivals that North America has ever experienced. If you were there at any of these, you've got stories, for sure. 11 o'clock on News Talk 580 CFRA. Graham Richardson always has a story for us. He'll be joining us right after the news headlines on Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's me. Hi. I'm the problem. It's me. At tea time, everybody agrees.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl. Text 580-580 right now.
Hill. 11:09 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're just letting Taylor just take us as far as I possibly could there. I was watching this little clip. Graham Richardson is here this morning. I don't even know where they're from. It's a team of football players talking about their favorite Taylor song. And I think there were two guys who said they don't really listen, and everyone else had an answer going back into the vintage Taylor, which was really cute.
Since you've been away, the quotient of Taylor Swift
There has not been as much on this program. We're
going
to ramp that back up. We might do a full Taylor session again next week with Eric Alper on our Music Monday. How about hockey? Have you guys been talking about hockey a whole lot while I've been gone?
Quite a bit. Quite a bit. Wow.
So last night, I think I was the only one in our sort of work group of friends who do watch hockey regularly who was not sitting in front of the Oilers game. This is how that wrapped up last night after an absolutely amazing comeback.
9:27 left in OT. A stretch pass. Hyman, a shot. He scores! Zach Hyman wins it in overtime.
Wow.
Wow. They were down 3-0 at one point.
They were down. It was a brutal first period. They're facing, going back to Edmonton, down 3-1. And they are the favorite here because they've had such an amazing season. And
they've got some really good players.
They do. And they score 3 goals in the second to tie it. Then they go down again halfway through the third. And I'm like, this can't go to overtime. It's West Coast. I was up until 12:30 watching this, and then that goal happened. Thrilling.
Oh, so I was going to say, why were you up till 12:30? But I'm guessing it's because your son's back in town, and you're watching with him?
He was watching in the basement with his buddies. But
okay.
Yes,
I was watching.
Well, I was going to go to bed. And then I'm like, oh my God, they tied it. Because I was giving up on the Oilers after the first period.
Yeah.
But they came out second period just gunning.
Because this is what you do. You're either all in or you're immediately
I'm not interested.
Yeah.
That's the way I watch. But a special connection with this team. My son was born in Edmonton. My wife is from Alberta. And if we had to pick an Alberta team, of course it would be the Oilers.
Special connection now.
Yes.
After you rejected the Oilers back in the 80s when they were so amazing.
Well, with Gretzky. Yeah.
Yeah, you've said you didn't watch.
It's a huge regret.
They drove you crazy. And
they were so good.
You missed Gretzky's entire career.
I missed Gretzky's entire career. Yeah. And then covered his retirement in Edmonton as a reporter. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I just missed Gordie Howe's career because I was so wrapped up in
Gordie Howe's career.
Well, like a Gordie Howe-like career is what I'm saying. It's like a chance of a lifetime.
You missed a lot of guys.
I missed a lot of guys. So I said I'd never do that again. I never do that again.
It is tough sometimes to appreciate a player. I told you my Sidney Crosby story from when they were here. They were here years ago, and I was taking my middle kid, who's now 18, and she was, I feel like she was around 4 or 5, and she was not necessarily huge into the sports, but she would embrace whatever opportunity. And I always had two tickets, so I was always taking one child because their dad was working the games. And so I was telling her about Sidney Crosby as we're driving on the Queensway and we're in traffic. And I was like, he's just incredible. He's one of the best players in the world. He started playing, I think, the year that you were born was when he was drafted. And I'm telling her everything about him. And she asked questions. So what's his number? His number is 87. He was born. He's from the East Coast. He used to play for this. Telling her all this stuff. And she's getting very, very excited about it. She's really into it. Okay, so we're going to see Sidney Crosby. This is going to be amazing. And we get there and we get into the stands and they do the player introductions and there's big cheers for him. And she looks at me and she says, he doesn't even play for the Senators. I forgot to mention that because we were all Senators all the time. Of course, she didn't understand that we could be appreciating someone who played for the other team. So she looked at me like I had completely betrayed her and that we were going to see this amazing new Ottawa Senator.
That's great. Like,
okay, important detail. You gotta
remember he's not on our team.
Full story. But that's the thing that we've often, and especially when Ottawa was not great for years, you just love seeing these players that came to visit, right? And showcase when they're here.
Well, and I know there's he's a generational talent, and for the regular season anyway, McDavid has just been on a mission, and Draisaitl and McDavid, the two of them are just a force. So they are my second Canadian team for sure. So
yeah, absolutely,
they're the ones I go to when the Sens are out.
Yeah. Okay. So who's my second team?
You're probably, are you the Habs fan? Probably,
yeah, which isn't, I mean, you're not supposed to like someone in the same division or anything like that, but I love seeing games at the Bell Center. We should talk locally about some hockey, too, that's been really exciting. The Ottawa 67s are having quite the year, quite the playoff. Was not looking good for them either. They also had a massive comeback win.
Thomas Sermon, top of the circles, finds Morelli, his blast, they score! A shot from the point by Frankie Morelli finds the back of the net. The 67s have their first lead of the game with 2:08 remaining in regulation. It's 5-4 Ottawa.
This is where I start thinking I want to get out and see some of them. So they came back. I think they were down 4-1.
My son was at the game. Okay. He's texting me. He's like, this is brutal.
He didn't invite you to that either.
Well, I was in Toronto. I was picking up the other son. Okay. He's like, this is brutal. They're down 4-1. And then I see in our same text group, I'm like, they came back. And then I text Jack. I'm like, he's like, it's unbelievable. The place is going nuts.
So great all of this. Okay, so watching the really exciting teams, even what's happening with Toronto. I mean, they won overtime too. You know, I don't mind. Win a couple of games. Hopefully still lose the series or maybe not. But watching them, watching the Oilers, what they're doing, then watching the 67s here locally, all of it just feeds the hunger to have an Ottawa NHL team back in the playoffs and hopefully next year.
Like, right, I love the first round when my team's not in it, because every other night there's another story. But watching that last night, I cannot get out of my head Brady Tkachuk in the playoffs. Like, it will be, he will be a force. Like the style of play that turns, you know, like when Toronto had their weak game, when they blew it in the first game, they didn't have that sort of down and dirty, low in front of the net, bruising style that you need to get through the playoffs. They kind of showed some of it. I think that's their main fault. And that is his style of play. And I think I can't wait. I can't
Brady
wait
Tkachuk
to see it.
Does it all. Matthew Tkachuk had a beautiful goal the other night. But let's put him in the stands. Let's have him here in the stands cheering on Brady. That would really entertain us.
Yeah,
absolutely. Some good hockey happening right now, which is a good distraction for all the public servants who are out on strike. Are you thinking this is going to get resolved quickly? Or
obviously, well, I mean, I think we're in day six, and that is, they're close on money. They're really close on money. And if I understand the president of the union on the weekend, they have some kind of a concession that they're talking about remote work at the table in the agreement. So I don't know. At some point, they're going to have to take a win, read the room, and get back to work, because I don't know what the outstanding issue is. And if it's far apart on money, I can just look at the public offer, and they're not that far apart. It's 1 point each.
Yeah, money, the working conditions, the remote, where that all goes. We'll obviously continue to watch that today. You know who's not reading the room before I let you go?
Who?
You and I.
Why?
This text. My hope was that after the Senators completed another losing season that we wouldn't have to hear any more hockey news on CFRA. Sorry, I'm back. Here we go. 11:17.
We love talking the hockey. Come on.
News Talk 580. We're Canadian.
Yes.
On News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:23 on News Talk 580 CFRA. I want to talk about a very serious situation that is happening overseas right now, and we're seeing members of the Sudanese-Canadian community calling on the federal government to do more to help some of the civilians that are trapped over in Sudan, where there's been ongoing fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and a powerful paramilitary group there called the Rapid Support Forces Group. There were a number of rallies on the weekend, including in Toronto, trying to get the attention of the federal government and this ask for more aid. And we are joined now on the line by Ahmad Sadi, board member for the Sudanese Canadian Communities Association. Good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning.
How horrible is this for you to be here watching what is happening over there, and what is your reaction generally to what's gone on?
Yeah, it's the situation is very terrible. It's been very stressful. We are not able to sleep properly in the last whole week almost. The situation on the ground is deteriorating by minutes. So the longer the war goes on, the more crisis will come.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what is it that Sudanese Canadians would like to see happening right now? What are you hearing from other people who have family and friends there in terms of what the need is right now?
Yeah, the number one, like the many families we know, they're stuck there. And some families are like half here maybe and the other half there. So they need to be, you know, evacuated from Sudan back to Canada. And many of them might have a school or and so on, so they need to come back. So the government need to work harder with other international committees to evacuate all the Canadian citizens from there. Also, we have the permanent residents as well. There are a lot of people who are permanent residents, and they are there for a vacation or something. So they need to come back as well. So all these need to be helped out.
So you would like to see the Canadian government help sponsor some of the relatives of people here who are stuck there or have had to flee. But at the same time, we're hearing, from the federal government that they're temporarily suspending operations in Sudan. They're having Canadian diplomats work from a safe location outside the country while still trying to support Canadians in the country. How much more difficult does that make any of that process?
Yeah, obviously, yes, because the fact on that they closed their consular service in Sudan will make the situation more difficult. But we can also understand there's some safety concern because the war is going on in Khartoum, the capital. But somehow they need to figure out a way to work, remotely or do something to help out all these people.
Have other countries been more successful in getting their nationals out of Sudan?
Yeah, we heard, but no. Today there have been less communication in Sudan. They used to have a strong internet in the last week or so, but from yesterday until now, it's less internet is not that available. So it'd be very difficult to get information. But we heard some maybe U.S. maybe they were able to take some of their citizens, and we heard also there was a plane or two today evacuating some people, but we don't know how many Canadians are in those.
How many Sudanese-Canadians are here?
You mean in Sudan right now?
No, here in Canada. How big is the community here?
Yeah, it's 1,000. Maybe 30,000 or more.
And do you yourself have a lot of friends and family members over there who are affected by this?
Yes, I do have all my brothers and sisters and nephews, nieces, and also extended family, all of them in Sudan.
And have you been able to talk to them through this time?
No, since I think today the second day, I'm not able to reach out to them.
So what are you feeling as you fight on behalf of others who are in a similar position, but you're also struggling with not being able to reach family or get adequate detail on what's happening for them? What is your foremost thought?
Yeah, it is. It is really. We are very concerned that the situation is going to be only worse. It cannot be better unless the international community, the government of Canada, they intervene, they stop this war. The situation will only be worse, and there's no winner. The international community is going to lose on this because the war is not good for anybody. And there are going to be a lot of casualties, a lot of disaster going on in Sudan.
Mm. And I mean, this has been a situation for a while, but the fighting really got bad just over a week ago or so with this escalation in terms of what was happening. Do you see any way out anytime soon?
I think it's very hard because the two leaders of the rabbit forces and the military, they both a kind of personal revenge. So they're fighting over power and over resources of Sudan. So it's very difficult to say that they're going to reach an end.
Mm. What's...
Yeah, but I believe that once the war starts, it's not easy to go away.
No,
because it could go on forever. So who knows?
Scary, scary stuff. What's next for your group? Are there other rallies planned or other moves planned?
Yes. We're continuously working on talking to media, trying to meet officials, and trying to make rallies and meetings and so on. So we're trying to do as best as we can. And we're also collecting some donations on our website, Sudanese Canadian Community Association. So we have a donation button so we can collect donations to help out some people we can't.
Okay. And sorry, the website again is?
Yeah. If you just Google Sudanese Canadian Community Association.
Okay. You'll find it.
Yeah.
Sudanese Canadian Community Association. Imad Saadi is a board member of that. We wish you all the very best and hope that your friends and family remain safe. Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
11:29 on News Talk 580 CFRA, desperate situation in Sudan where that fighting broke out on April 15th. And as you heard, Canada has now moved its diplomats outside the country and the ongoing ask to do more to sponsor some of those family members that are stuck over there for the time being. 11:30 here on News Talk 580 CFRA. We are going to take a quick break for your news headlines. When we come back, our question of the day today, we've been asking you what you would do as night mayor if you were going to revamp the nightlife in the city of Ottawa. We'll share some of those thoughts, and Matt Scooby will join us as well. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
I want to scream and shout and let it all out and scream and shout.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I want to scream and shout and let it all out and scream and shout and let it out. We saying, oh, we are, oh, we are, oh, we are. Oh.
You are now rocking with Will I Am in
Britney.
11:38 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. I almost want to say good Friday morning to you. It feels like it's been a long week already. It's only Monday.
I was like, literally not even noon on Monday, and no, we're already talking about Friday? Okay.
I know. kind of a gray Monday. Looks like the week is going to be better. But
it's my Friday tomorrow. Not that I don't rub it in.
Oh, it's your Friday tomorrow?
I'm off for the rest of the week after
and
that.
And then you're heading west or something.
Yes, Vancouver.
Yeah. Miserable place. So, you won't like it.
I know. Looks pretty awful, actually.
It's going to look a lot like this, maybe. Have you looked at the forecast?
I have not looked at the forecast yet because I, like you, don't pack in advance of things.
Right.
So, yeah. So it will be, this will happen today.
And well, I buy the seat of whatever pants you end up putting in.
Exactly. So we'll look at the forecast today and get packed up tonight and tomorrow night.
Yeah, absolutely. You make fun of Vancouver weather, but usually it's pretty nice. Just they have too much freezing rain in the
more
winter,
moderate.
But
more
the
moderate,
one time, because I was there for the Olympics, was there for a whole month. It was very mild. Remember, it got a little bit too mild for some of the events
right.
on occasion, but never had to pull out the actual big winter coat that they gave us for.
No, that doesn't happen.
Plus, it was the first time that I ever experienced, and we have it all over the place now. And of course, COVID really fast tracked that, but it was the first place I ever experienced sitting on a patio in Canada in February with the heaters. Keep the patios going all the time. I'm like,
yep.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
This is amazing. Well,
it's
now
like,
we do it here.
Yeah.
I did Lansdowne in January in the height of COVID. That was less than pleasant.
Have to do it, though. Have to do it.
You got to do what you have to do for a drink. So, not terrible conditions to be out on the picket lines, but not super pleasant either when it's a little bit rainy and gray. But they are back out there in full force today. No resolution yet.
No. And we heard from Chris Aylward, I think, last night and some of the communication that went out that they have made some progress, which I know that we have been reporting this morning. But other than that, it doesn't sound super optimistic at this point. It does sound, the Canadian press was reporting at one point today that PSAC is planning to turn up the heat on the government, maybe possible protests, and not protests, but the picket lines at ports, at terminals. We haven't
seen
that.
Strategic locations.
Right, the strategic locations. So we don't know exactly for sure where yet, but you know, there was talk of that last week that it could end up being the airport or a few airports across the country. You know, we live down close towards some border crossings, whether it's Brockville and the bridge or otherwise along our region. So remains to be seen, but it doesn't, they're clearly not there yet. And at least they were at the table talking over the weekend. I think mm-hmm. that's a positive sign, but still no end in sight yet.
We will keep our eye on it for you, of course, through the day and beyond. Now, I came back last week, half days doing TV after my injury. So I had a chance to talk to you on the CTV Ottawa side, having mm-hmm. talked to you here on News Talk 580 CFRA for a while. But, you know, we had a chance to kind of rub in the tough start to the playoff round for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who mm-hmm. lost their first game in a big way. Then they came back with a resounding win in game two. And speaking of people making progress, have made some progress with a big overtime win leading this series. So all is looking cheery again in the Leafs world.
No.
But I know,
no.
I know. You're waiting till they win a series
yet.
Before
right.
you get on board.
Don't say all cheery. Don't set it all up that way.
Okay, so I understand for you that you are hanging back. You feel like you've been
so the last six
left
years,
out to dry.
Yes.
By
the last
team.
6 years, this team has gone up 2-1 in a series.
Yeah.
In their first round playoff series.
Yeah.
Except for 2018. This is what happens. What did I tell you?
I don't know.
What
one
did I,
one
what
of these
did,
years, it's going to work out for the Leafs.
What did I tell you after game one?
Yeah.
What did I tell you after game
one? You
spelled
it all out.
Did I run this
down?
Let me spell
it
out.
How it was going
to
go.
So, right. So, yeah. Lightning, game one. Leafs come back and win game two. You know, they come to Tampa. I said they were going to split. So, mm-hmm. Leafs won. They didn't deserve to win that game on Saturday, but they did win that game. I would expect probably that the Lightning are going to win tonight. The Leafs will probably lose game five at home, win game six on the road, and then we know what happens in game seven.
I'm so nervous watching these all the time. Like, I know there's tons of Leafs fans in this city. I really don't want them to win a playoff round. I love the little bit of lore that they haven't won a round since 2004. Okay, so that explains why you're not super cheery. Why is the Leafs general manager not super cheery? Kyle Dubas seems to be in a bit of a mood, even though they're up 2-1 in the
series.
I wonder
what that was actually said for him to go off on something like that. Because
a video on social media where mm-hmm. he was exchanging with some
heated
fans.
Heated yeah. words.
Yes.
I think back and forth, and I'm not sure. I think it was something not necessarily I would say that crossed the line, but you don't normally see a general manager or anybody up in a booth like that engaging with fans in that way. So.
not an actual clip from the
right,
actual
no.
event.
But so maybe, you know, clearly something was said that he didn't like, and maybe just at that point, and so be it. I don't mind it. I don't mind it one bit. That's like just like that. I don't mind
invested.
I don't mind Linus Ullmark with Matthew Tkachuk too, Boston in 10 Florida series either, right? The goaltender trying to fight guy who's been bugging him all game. You know, it's playoffs and it's that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So
all
I
those
got,
lines,
no
you know, it's a business and it's still a business. But when you see the guys in the upper echelons too, the GMs and everyone and how
like
they
they're in, you
get into it,
the pressure,
show that passion.
Yeah.
Okay. So
did you like my essay last night? Also, like you requested.
Oh yeah.
You requested.
Okay.
Let me go
did
back.
Did you write this or did you copy this from
Sportsnet
or something?
I sat there
oh
and
gosh,
I wrote
I
that
this.
Out last night. So we have just for the background on this, there's a few of us from the CTV newsroom that have an NHL chat. Mostly it's send stuff during the year.
Yes.
And I started this a few years ago, but I think during the pandemic, actually, when we couldn't watch games together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we go back and forth
called
about different
CTV
things.
CTV NHL
all the time.
Chat. One of
right.
our directors tries to change it to Red Blacks chat in the summer, but it always gets switched back
it
right away.
Exactly. I was like, Marlene, just leave it alone. But, and so, you know, we have different chats. But so we were watching, because the Edmonton Oilers LA Kings game last night was excellent.
Yes.
Really, really good game.
I was the only one not watching.
I think you were the only one not watching. And so, and then what did you do? Tell the people
so,
what you did.
I thought the game was just about done at this point when you guys were talking about it. I guess it was headed to overtime at
second
this point.
Intermission. Second
so, okay,
intermission.
Okay, so I said, I didn't watch. Can someone please write me a one-page essay for radio tomorrow? It can be double-spaced. So to catch me up, because I was going to try to go to bed early because since I had this ski accident that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of trouble sleeping. I have to sleep on my back and I don't normally sleep on my back. So I'll sleep for a couple hours. I'll be awake for a couple. So I was worried about getting up earlier than I've had to for radio this morning. I wanted to get a good sleep. So I was trying to tune all of this out. But I'm like, oh, but I want to know what happened to be able to talk about the Oilers on the radio. So I jokingly said, write me an essay. It can be double spaced. Matt Scooby, obviously overachiever that he is. Should I read your whole
No, you don't have to read it all. No, I didn't. It was like
this
five.
This is his first paragraph. The Edmonton Oilers were looking to avoid going down 3-1 in their first round playoff series to the Los Angeles Kings. After a horrendous start, the Oilers have fought back. But to what end?
That's an excellent introduction, if I don't say so myself, right? A little intro line, cliffhanger. I had my body of my essay and then my conclusion.
Above and beyond. I just hope I saw my son at the computer doing some homework yesterday. I just hope he was putting that much.
Then Graham chimes in. Graham just used ChatGPT and comes up with all the different ones, which was actually smart.
All the different comebacks over the years, and crazy, which I love that kind of thing. And there's been a lot of good comebacks in the playoffs. So. Yeah. Love that. Absolutely. Okay. So game four tonight, and you are saying that you think your Leafs are going to lose.
Likely. Mm. Yeah. That would be my expectation. As history has taught me, this is, yes, what happens.
I rarely want you to be right, Matt Scooby, but in this case, kind of hope you are. Coming up to 11:46 here on News Talk 580 CFRA, Matt Scooby will have all your news on the CTV Ottawa News at noon. He will be very neutral, except perhaps if he has to talk about the Leafs. At any point.
We'll see.
None of us are so neutral there. Yeah. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Need the rain. I need you like the sun when the clouds turn gray. Oh, you like the...
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
A little bit of a rainy Monday morning. Some light rain falling out there. Not a lot of rain in the forecast this week. We have a few days that are saying chance of showers, but not significant rain at this point. For most of us, of course, just an inconvenience. Maybe you have to throw on the jacket, missing the sunshine. Some people watching the water levels very closely out there again this year. I have often said that one of the toughest things I've ever had to do in terms of covering a story in this area was going back to some of the same homes in 2019 and talking to some of the same people that were hit in 2017 by flooding that we talked about at the time being sort of a once in a 100-year kind of occurrence. And then they were dealing with similar horrific conditions just a couple of years later. So you can imagine it's pretty traumatic for a lot of people who have been through this before. Now, certain areas look pretty good this year. Other areas are a little more concerning. On the weekend, we were hearing that levels on the Ottawa River in the Whitewater Region Township of the Ottawa Valley were getting up close to water levels seen back in 2017. We want to see how that is looking here on a Monday morning. Checking in now with Neil Nicholson, who is the mayor in that township. Good morning to you, Neil.
Good morning, Patricia. Thanks for having me today.
I appreciate you coming on. So how are we doing? Did it get pretty scary over the weekend?
It did. We were uncertain how much rain we would get and where it would fall. So people were watching very closely to see how that might affect our levels on the Ottawa.
So where are we at right now in terms of how far you get, I guess, above sea level or whatever the best calculation of that is?
Yeah, in our community, we have two reference points along our coastline. It's about a 62-kilometer coastline, so it's pretty significant. Right now, we're just shy of 113 meters above sea level on one side, and then the other side, we're at about just over 108 meters. Both are right on the cusp of the same height we had in 2017, so it is pretty significant for our community.
Okay, so we'll do a mental map here for a second. So where is Pembroke situated in this region?
Pembroke is just upriver of us, about 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay. So how many homes would be in this area that you're talking about where you're getting these measurements?
Yeah, in our Pembroke reference point, that bay, that large body of water, we have about 60 homes that are right now surrounded by water. In some cases, 2 or 3 feet cover their yards. We're getting water in the basements and, some things are floating around their yards at this point.
And how were those, was 2017 the year when it was really bad for you? Were you guys spared in 2019? Was it bad in on both those sort of areas?
Yeah. It was bad in both.
Yeah.
2019 was horrific.
Okay.
That was when we had levels go up basically another meter, 2 meters from what we're seeing
right
now.
Oh man. Okay.
Some of our homes had 8 feet of water in them, completely destroyed by the flooding.
So what does that do in terms of people watching and preparing and hoping it doesn't get as bad? Are people just that much more, I would say nervous, but probably more terrified about what they might be facing because of what they've been through in the past?
Yeah, it's a significant strain on people's mental health to be able to look at that water and not know what's going to happen. The good thing is that our community is pretty tight-knit. And a lot of experience from 2017 and 2019. So, mm-hmm. You know, the newcomers, the people that have recently moved here, they're a little more wary, but the other folks, they remain on pins and needles. Yes.
So for those people in the areas really affected, is it true that some have already had to, you know, jump in a canoe to navigate to get to their car and that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Like I said, there's about 50 or 60 homes that are completely surrounded, and they've moved their vehicles out to higher ground. And they're accessing their homes and moving stuff back and forth by boat.
Okay. And staying in their homes or out of their homes completely?
Right now, we believe that most of them are staying in their homes. There's still power, and they're making sure their sump pumps are running, and they're trying to make sure that their homes are protected. The biggest threat right now when the waters are at this height is wind. Mm. And we were really watching Sunday afternoon when we heard some wind gusts were getting up. The waves and the debris in the water can tear off the front of the home. So that's the biggest thing right now when we have the heights at this level is what's the wind going to do? What direction is it blowing? How big are the waves?
Yeah, some of those big items that should not be in the water that are so... dangerous, of course. And it's the thing about this is it's just a slow, torturous process as people try to do their best to protect their homes. And, you know, we've seen in the past, sometimes you'd get through a night sandbagging and think you'd made it and then only to discover hours later that, no, it's just coming up that much more. And it's kind of that just slow, demoralizing process. But how is it looking in terms of maybe some kind of a plateau and maybe going to be okay this year? Are you feeling somewhat optimistic?
Yeah, the news that came out late last night from the OttawaRiver.ca website, which is a regulation board that takes the information from 9 different agencies that manage the flow on the Ottawa and into the Ottawa. Their forecast sees us plateau this week, which mm-hmm. has been great news. Again, mm-hmm. now the big concern is wind. But people aren't letting up. The way this the Ottawa River works is that the northern waters are now being held back by large dams and reservoirs, such as Temiskaming. Now they are holding back their spring melt for as long as they can to allow the current levels to dissipate. The fear, and what happened in 2019, is they had to release their waters. They couldn't hold them back anymore. Mm-hmm. So we were already up at this level, and then we received all the melt from up north. And that's what happened. It caused a lot of the damage. So as long as we can hold, they can continue to hold their water, and we can continue to have our water flow downstream, we'll be in good stead for the second surge.
And we are certainly hoping that all goes beautifully over these next few weeks as we continue to watch water levels in lots of parts of our region. Once again, that was Neil Nicholson, mayor of Whitewater Region Township. This has been Ottawa at Work. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back here 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Have a wonderful afternoon.
This is News Talk 580 CFRA. Ottawa's home for live, local, breaking news.